Welcome to Noon Edition. I'm Bob Zaltzberg, editor of the Herald Times in Bloomington, along with Mary Catherine Carmichael, and we have a two-part program today. The first half of the show, we're going to talk with three people from Mother Hubbard's Cupboard, a local food pantry that emphasizes healthful foods and habits. And during the second half of the show, we're going to be discussing the Salvation Army. So with us in the first half of the show are Brooke Gentile, who's the executive director, Stephanie Solomon, assistant director, and Maggie Sullivan, who's a volunteer with Mother Hubbard's Cupboard. If you have questions or comments, please phone us at 855-0811 or 877-285-9348. Or you can send your email to noon@indiana.edu. Welcome to all of you. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Yeah. Well, we know a little bit about Mother Hubbard's Cupboard, but we're going to find out a lot more about it today.
And we just like to say it.
And we do. I'll probably stumble over it before the day is over. Great. The cupboard has been around for how long?
No. We were founded in 1998, March of 1998.
Yeah, so 10 years. Mm-hmm. And can you talk a little bit about what sets Mother Hubbard's apart from other food pantries?
Absolutely. There are a lot of food pantries in Bloomington, in the county, and sort of in the region. What sets us apart is we are the largest food pantry in Monroe County. We're currently serving 1,550 people in need every week, almost 500 families every week. And the other thing that's quite unique about us is we're a patron's choice pantry. So we're set up quite like a grocery store. And we operate on the honor system. So clients sign in, very simple sign-in process. And they receive a bag, an empty bag for each person in their household. And they can fill it with what they want from our pantry shelves. We also prioritize healthy food. So we have a whole produce section and a whole cooler and freezer full of lots of organic dairy products and frozen prepared foods.
Wow. So you deal in perishables as well as non-perishables.
Absolutely.
Does that set you apart from other pantries as well?
Quite often, because most pantries are a little smaller and they might not have the infrastructure, the cooler facility, you know, to keep things preserved maybe to the next day or mm-hmm. 2 days later. They also don't have the foot traffic that we do. You know, if we have 500 individuals coming through in a single day, we can move hundreds of pounds of produce that the food bank rescues from grocery stores that would inevitably go to the landfill. So, mm-hmm.
Well, I think that's one of the things that surprised me about Mother Hubbard's when I heard Julio Alonso talk about the Hoosier Hills Food Bank's relationship with you, which is you're their biggest customer, essentially.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
By quite a long shot.
Yeah. Last year, we distributed 690,000 pounds of food that came from Hoosier Hills Food Bank, where we distributed 32% of all of the food bank's food last year. And there are about 95 agencies that go to the food bank, as we do.
Mm-hmm. So 32% of that, and there are 95 agencies. So that's quite a hefty chunk.
Yeah. We could not do what we do without the help of the food bank, that's for sure.
Right. So let's talk with Maggie as a volunteer. How'd you get involved?
Well, I've known Brooke. I work with the local Growers Guild, and so Brooke and I have collaborated on a couple different projects, and I've been working with Stephanie as well. And Stephanie in particular urged me to come and help in the garden project, which she's going to talk a little bit more about later. But I started in February. We weren't really into the gardening groove yet, so I started helping out in the pantry, just stocking shelves and seeing how the whole thing worked. Mm-hmm. It was an eye-opening experience seeing that many people come through, and everybody's super polite, super nice, but really, really needing that extra food.
Yeah, and this is that's another point, and you know, Brooke made it already, but this is a place where people can come, and you don't ask them whether they don't have to be 150% or 200% of the poverty level or anything else. I mean, you don't ask. It's just people come and they take what they need, right?
We do have a list of guidelines. We ask that each household meet at least one of the guidelines. One of the guidelines is a household meets, you know, is at 200% or less of the poverty level. But you could be a single parent that doesn't receive child support. You could be 55 years or older. You could have really high medical expenses. You could just basically not be able to meet expenses, basic living expenses for that month. But we do take people at their word for it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, with the way things are going, gasoline is going to be at $4 a gallon probably before the end of the weekend. We hope not. But and, you know, I just had a meeting this morning with someone from the state involved with health care, and we had a program on that last week.
Mm-hmm.
You know, everything is going up. So what's that mean for you in terms of the need and the number of people coming through your doors?
We've actually seen quite a significant increase just in 1 month. So I'll try to be quite simple about this. But in March, if you look at our March statistics compared to our April statistics, we had a 44% increase in 1 month. 44% more client visits that we provided in just that 1 month. The other thing is that we saw a 100% increase in that 1 month in new shoppers coming to us. So in March, we had 135 new shoppers come to us, people who had never been to us before. And in April, we had 362.
Is that an unprecedented increase in the time you've been there?
In the time I've been there, yes. To have that many new shoppers in such a short time frame, yes.
So you said 135 in March and 362?
360, yeah, more or less.
Wow, that's almost three times as many, right?
Yeah.
That's an amazing increase.
And you used a phrase that I was interested in earlier. You used the phrase food insecurity. Could you tell us exactly what you mean by food insecurity?
Sure. Food insecurity is frequently used to refer to households that have a hard time accessing food that they need, just basic food, for a variety of reasons, financial, transportation, or maybe they just live in an area that doesn't have healthful food. And maybe the bus doesn't always get you there. Maybe with gas so expensive, it's hard to get to it. So we serve a lot of people that are experiencing this inability to get healthful food, but also people who are sort of near the edge of experiencing that. So we're trying to bridge that gap so people don't really get into that extreme situation of need.
Mm-hmm. All right. Now we need to let Stephanie say something.
Well, what you were saying was making me think I just saw on the back of a news, I think some kind of newspaper, an ad that was showing a picture of a car and a picture of a fork. And it said, which one is using more fossil fuels? And they talked about the fork and food production being a big part of that. So when you were talking about, you know, the raising cost of gas, I was thinking about how we're all thinking about it in terms of our vehicles. But it's also, I mean, in terms of our food security, big deal.
Yeah. The impact all the way through the way we live is definitely true. So what are you guys doing about that?
We're growing our own food. we come from two angles. One of them is that we have three organic gardens around town where we have volunteers and patrons and community members coming and using their skills and expertise to help us grow healthful, nutritionally robust foods for the pantry. But we also offer workshops to our patrons and community members in how to plant their own backyard gardens. So it's not for us just about growing food for our pantry and giving out that food, but also giving our patrons and the people in our community the skills that they can take home. Going back to the victory garden idea of having backyard gardens. So in the case of your own family's food insecurity, you have those skills to grow some of your food. And we have these lawns with all the sun. I mean, we might as well learn to use them.
What about preserving that food? I know, you know, July, August, even into September, we've got food. You know, there's jokes about the zucchini multiplying at night on their own. but do you teach people also how to preserve the food that they grow then so they can use it in a more sustainable fashion throughout the year?
We do. It's really – there's been a lot of great partnerships with experts in the community. And one really great one is with the Extension Office, Sue Berg, who for quite a few years has done a canning and jamming class with us where a group of patrons and community members come in and learn how to can tomatoes and make peach jam. And it's a, you know, very popular class and a very simple method. And she's just an expert. So we've been really lucky to be able to offer that. And
if somebody would like to learn more about that, what would they do?
Well, they could always, you know, be in touch with me personally, and then I could connect them. That's a nice thing about being in this position is I kind of know who the experts are in different things like that. And they could be on our website watching the class postings. That canning and jamming class is a class that we offer annually. So, and we're hoping to add a solar drying and general food preservation class sometime in this next season. And I'm also teaching a fermentation class, which is another method of food preservation that's going to be through People's University in August. And our website address is mhcfoodpantry.org. And you can see a whole list of all of our classes and the classes that we do through People's University on there.
And your phone number?
355-6843.
Okay, we've got all that basic information out
yeah.
there now. I want to remind our listeners that we're talking with three people from Mother Hubbard's Cupboard. This is a little different kind of program today. We're going to talk to them until about 12:30. Then we have another topic after the break. A lot of times people wait until after the break to call in their questions. So I would encourage you to call in your questions now about the local food pantry, Mother Hubbard's Cupboard, if you have questions for them. The numbers again, 855-0811 or 877-285-9348, or you can send your email to noon@indiana.edu. I want to talk about the gardens a little bit more. And Maggie, you're with the local Growers Guild. What do you guys do in terms of these local community gardens? Who works at the gardens and what kind of a yield do you have?
Well, we have three Mother Hubbard's Cupboard gardens, and we've been lucky enough to work with Parks and Recreation with their community gardens. We have a very large section of the Crestmont Community Gardens, but those are overseen and the land is donated to us from Parks and Recreation. And so the rest of those are community members, and then Brad Drake runs that program. And then at the Harmony Garden, we have, that's obviously part of the Harmony Elementary School and a partnership with the staff there. Maggie can tell you more about the Local Growers Guild.
The Local Growers Guild is a cooperative of small farmers in Monroe County and surrounding counties. A lot of the folks that sell at the Bloomington Community Farmers Market, some of them sell through CSAs or to area restaurants or all kinds of different arrangements. And we're kind of working on a different level at the sort of commercial farmer level. I mean, we're still talking pretty small farms, people that really like that direct contact with the consumer. But we're trying to build up that part of the picture. And one of the things a lot of our farmers do is with the Plant a Row for the Hungry program through the Hoosier Hills Food Bank, they'll donate any extra produce that they are not able to sell at the farmers market. And a lot of that gets routed to Mother Hubbard's Cupboard since they have such great facilities for handling that fresh produce. There's also a new program starting this year with Hoosier Hills Food Bank that will be a gleaning program that will allow some volunteer crews to actually go out to the farms and collect extra produce that the farmer was not able to harvest. Either it's too small or too ugly for a market, but still perfectly edible. And they're also starting to look into some of those food preservation options. How can we rescue every single zucchini and tomato that comes to us in August? Mm-hmm. And I think there are some possibilities for doing a lot of great work.
Do you have a partnership or some sort of program with Middleway House?
You are thinking of the Community Kitchen Project.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, the Incubator Kitchen. The Middleway House has the old Coca-Cola building on Washington Street, and that is being renovated to be a new facility that's got a lot of different components. But the one that we're most interested in is it'll be a commercial kitchen that will primarily house Middleway Food Works, which is their catering business. But it will also be available for farmers and entrepreneurs and community members to come in and make their own value-added products, their canned goods or their frozen goods or dried or fermented, all kinds of different things, in a facility that makes it legal to be resold to the public. So we're really excited about all the possibilities that that will open up. And mm-hmm. so that program, Middleway House is obviously the biggest player, but they've been working with Mother Hubbard's Cupboard, Local Growers Guild, City of Bloomington, Parks and Recreation, Center for Sustainable Living, Purdue Extension.
Hoosier Hills Food Bank.
Hoosier Hills Food Bank. SCORE, Seed Corp, and I hope I'm not overlooking anyone, but it's a big, big community project.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it sounds like a pretty fabulous project that hopefully will just get bigger
mm-hmm.
as time goes on. Okay, we have a phone call. Let's go to Steve on the phone. Steve?
Hello.
Hi, Steve.
Hi. First, I want to thank Mother Hubbard's for all the services that you provide to the community. And I assume you're always looking for volunteers.
They're shaking their heads.
Yes. Yeah.
Are you interested in volunteering with us?
I may be, yes. And well, I just wanted to throw that out so people knew there was an opportunity to volunteer if they wanted to. And I don't really have another question, but a comment. I found from my own experience with gardening and growing my own food, it's not just an economic or food security issue. I get a real psychological or spiritual benefit from working in the earth and growing something from seed to maturity. And I just wondered if your patrons get that kind of experience when they volunteer.
It's interesting that you said that because I was an IU student, and it was my studies that got me into gardening. I actually had an individualized major in spiritual eco-humanism, which in its own way was kind of spiritual environmentalism. And I grew up in the suburbs and found that getting involved with forest activism and gardening changed the way that I saw the world. And so that's what got me into gardening originally. And I think gardening is incredibly transformative. And we do see that with our volunteers that come into the garden. It's a huge part of it.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
Okay, well, thank you.
All right, Steve, thanks a lot for the call. 855-0811, 877-285-9348, and noon@indiana.edu.
You know, I think we should mention that our three panelists here today are knowledgeable, they're well-spoken, passionate young women. And I'm kind of struck by how young each of you are, and I'd like to know a little bit about how you got so far into this so early. Go ahead and jump in there.
Oh, gosh. Well, I graduated and just sort of propelled myself into the food world. I traveled through Europe and worked with small farmers and came back and was just really energized about bringing that knowledge of growing food to young people who didn't maybe know about it. So I started working in South Brooklyn with young kids and then again in California. And it's just been food since I got out of college. And when I ended up in Bloomington, there's so much that's going on here between the farmers market and the guild and all of our great social services here. It's just quite easy to get involved. Yeah, so that's for me.
Okay. Yeah, and like I said, I was an IU student, and I grew up in a suburb of Cleveland and felt, I just wasn't really very energized or successful in high school. And then I came to college and loved campus and loved all the flowering trees and just felt so energized and met all these people who were doing these wonderful things and got really involved. And I started working at Hilltop Garden and Nature Center, and I got, obsessed with organic gardening, and it just became my life. And then I started volunteering with the Mother Hubbard's Cupboard Gardens and met wonderful people and was the market master for a season, and just it became, my obsession and,
Found your passion.
Yeah. And I haven't, I haven't traveled. I've done all of my food work in Bloomington, so.
We're lucky to have you.
Yeah, well, I feel lucky to be here.
I've always been interested in the environment, protecting the environment. I was into sustainable living before it became trendy. And it seems like I've approached it from many, many different angles. I actually have my degree from Purdue in agricultural engineering. I worked as an environmental consultant for several years. I went out to Oregon to try and find some of those radical hippies I'd been hearing about. And I took a course in permaculture and eco-village design that was really, really inspiring. And it got me thinking a lot more about food and how that's such a basic need and something that we can take for granted, but it's really a big issue in terms of impacting our environment and our health and just the way that we live our lives. And so when I came back to Bloomington, this is my hometown, I started getting involved in local food and I started asking around to see what was happening. And like Brooke says, there is a lot going on in this town. And I kind of stumbled into the local Growers Guild, and I've been really happy helping farmers work together to try and come up with an alternative to going to the grocery store and buying tomatoes that were shipped in from who knows where. And I've really also enjoyed working with Mother Hubbard's Cupboard and seeing that other perspective of how do we help people in our community who maybe aren't in a position to go to the farmer's market or to the grocery store to get the food that they need.
I think we need to have these women back for a whole nother show. Because there are so many different directions that would be fascinating to pursue this.
Yeah.
But you're in a crisis situation really right now as far as your needs. So we probably should talk more about that. What avenues are you pursuing in order to meet this crisis?
Aside from the gardening. Well, for us, it's always every single year we're looking to grow and expand our food pantry and how many people we can serve. We've always grown by at least 15% every year. I mean, that's a lot of growth to keep up
sure.
with. So this year we've added a couple new fundraisers. We have a community-wide bike ride, the Hub Ride, coming up Saturday, August 2nd. There'll be more details forthcoming and on our website. It'll be posted. And we're also doing a silent auction early November, an evening event. But for us, it's really about getting more people, raising awareness in the community and having more people come out and volunteer with us and support us in our special events. It's really a community project. We are powered by about 100 volunteers at this point. The majority of them are our clients. And as far as financial support, we get about 60% of our cash budget from folks in the community. So we really rely on local support.
Mm-hmm. Now, I want to mention, we only have maybe 3 or 4 minutes to go. And in your mission and goals, Mother Hubbard's mission and goals, there are several things listed. But one I want you to talk a little bit about is empowerment. There are some things listed under there in terms of patron choice, patron volunteers, and education. Could you talk about how that fits in?
Absolutely. When all of our clients come through, it's very clear that there are easy ways to plug in and give back when it's comfortable for them and to whatever degree is comfortable for them. And so as I said, about 85% of our volunteers are our clients, and we really encourage them to find ways that are meaningful. So if folks want to volunteer in the garden, that's great. If they want to take on special projects, that's fabulous. We have whole fundraisers that have been supported by our clients who want to give back in special ways. And so it's supporting them to find meaningful ways to give back, but it's also supporting them to find meaningful ways to move on and sort of get beyond this crisis or this hunger that they're experiencing in their lives.
Mm-hmm.
And part of that is giving them the skills to make healthier choices.
Yeah, I think that's another thing that we maybe haven't stressed quite as much as we could have is the healthy choice issue of Mother Hubbard's in comparison perhaps with some other pantries that do great work and they distribute food that they get, usually non-perishable stuff, I think, mm-hmm. more often than not. But your goal is a little bit different in that you really want to be able to teach people about nutrition and provide an opportunity to get nutritious food. Isn't that correct?
Yes, very true. We quite often have sample tables in the pantry. So we show patrons how to prepare fresh whole foods. And we also hand out nutritional information or have dietetic students on site who can say, you know, this is actually this lacinato kale. It might look a little scary if you've never used it before, but it's actually so good for you. And look, it tastes good also. And here's a recipe. Take it home and here's some fresh produce from our garden. So there's a lot of that goes on every day in the pantry.
So if there's somebody out there now who maybe just finally went over the edge and decided I need to supplement my food, I would like to go to a food pantry and this sounds good to me, what could they expect if they walk through your door later on this afternoon?
A very simple sign-in process, a short orientation, and a sort of tour of our facility, and they could get anything from some whole grain granola bars to spinach from our garden and some salad mix, some potatoes and bananas and organic yogurt and milk and some frozen prepared foods.
Mm-hmm. And they just have a bag or a box and they just pick what they want?
Yeah, they get a bag for each person in their household and they can fill it with what they want from the pantry shelves.
Mm-hmm. And it does look a little bit like a grocery store.
Yep, we're set up like a grocery store and all in all, people spend maybe 5 minutes shopping and it's, yeah.
Yeah.
Great.
Okay.
All right. Here's an email that came in. It says, can you explain how or who works with clients for good nutrition on a budget?
Well, as the assistant director, I run the nutrition program. And so we, you know, as we were saying, consistently have sample tables and handouts. We do have a class that we're putting together right now that is talking about eating nutritiously on a budget. And we're continually coming up with new ideas for that. And we hope to eventually have some kind of a series because that's such a big question. I mean, the food that we have that is the most inexpensive is subsidized and usually is very, very processed. And when we talk about whole foods, we're talking about organic foods that are right now a specialty gourmet food and difficult for low-income people to have access to, really for a lot of people beyond just low-income mm-hmm. people. And so we hope to turn that around. I mean, I think it's a pretty, you know, it's a pretty intense thing we're doing by turning that around because mm-hmm. we're making those foods accessible to the people who have the least access. So we start there. We start by giving access in our pantry, but we move on by having education about growing that yourself. Information about when the farmers market started accepting food stamps. We spoke to the line every day saying, you know, use your food stamps at the farmers market. This is an amazing opportunity. So, yeah, and I do hope to have that class intact soon, and it'll be up on our website.
Okay, last thing, because we do have to go. The web address, phone number, ways people get in touch with you.
Absolutely. Our website is www.mhcfoodpantry.org, and our phone number is 812-355-6843. You can also fill out an online volunteer application on our website under volunteer, and as Stephanie said, all of our classes are posted on there as well.
All right. I want to thank our three guests today, Brooke Gentile, Stephanie Solomon and Maggie Sullivan, or Stephanie Solomon and Maggie Sullivan.
Yeah. Now say Mother Hubbard's Cupboard.
All from Mother Hubbard's Cupboard. It's a wonderful organization. I hope you'll support them. You're listening to Noon Edition. We'll be right back. Thanks. All right. Welcome back to Noon Edition. I'm Bob Zaltzberg from the Herald Times, along with Mary Catherine Carmichael. And we've just had a quick switch here in our studio, and we're going to be talking second half of the program about the Salvation Army. It actually is National Salvation Army Week. And with us in the studio is Peter Iverson, who's Community Relations Coordinator, and we're expecting Captain Elmer Gamble soon. He's en route. So, Peter, welcome.
Well, thanks for having us. We really appreciate it.
Sure. Thanks for being here. I'm sure that there are a lot of things to talk about with the Army, too, because it's a tough time. But let's talk first about National Salvation Army Week. What's that mean?
Absolutely.
Local events or anything?
Oh, sure. Yeah, we've got a week just jam-packed with events that's full of just lots of fun for the family. In fact, on Tuesday, we had our annual Donut Day, and that was such a great event. We handed out free donuts and coffee, and in the afternoon, we handed out free hot dogs and some lemonade and right there in front of the Von Lee Theater. And it was just a great event. Over 500 people stopped by. Just to say thank you to the Salvation Army. So it was a wonderful event. And then tonight we're going to be having our block party, and that's when we're going to be, again, cooking out right there in the Salvation Army parking lot on the corner of Rogers and Kirkwood. And we'll be having all sorts of fun games for the family. The National Tennis Association is going to be stopping by and bringing their tennis on tour, and that's a great way for the Tennis Association to teach tennis to kids.
Yeah, that sounds pretty fun.
Let's back up just a little bit, because a lot of people associate the Salvation Army mostly with a thrift store.
Sure.
But let's talk about maybe more broadly the mission of the Salvation Army.
The mission of the Salvation Army is to preach the gospel of Jesus Christ and to meet human needs in his name without discrimination. And that's one of the great things about the Salvation Army is written into the mission statement is a non-discrimination clause. And that's what we do day in and day out. We have six different departments at the Salvation Army here in Bloomington, where we offer child care, we offer access to social services, we offer, of course, the thrift store. I have church every Sunday starting at 11 a.m., and our doors are open to everybody. We do not discriminate, and we try and help those who are seeking assistance.
So you don't have to be a Christian to take advantage of Salvation Army programs?
Not at all. No, we don't discriminate on any basis.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, so yeah, we've talked with the last group here, and we've talked last week. We had a show on healthcare. It seems like, you know, the prices that are being driven up by the cost of gas and everything else, the economy in general, is causing some real difficulties for social service agencies and for individuals who need those agencies. Are you experiencing that kind of thing?
Absolutely. And, you know, as we look back over last month, we've noticed an uptick in the number of individuals seeking assistance from us. Generally, we serve around 150 Hoosier families in our food pantry every month. And last year, we saw it bumped up to about 160. We've been getting so many phone calls asking for gas assistance. We've definitely noticed an uptick in that. And unfortunately, it's just something with prices being where they are that we're unable to help with anymore. So we're definitely noticing that the people who are seeking assistance are calling upon us quite a bit more. And of course, we're struggling too with gas prices. We have two different summer camp options. Our child care operates during the summer too. And we've had to scale back some of our field trips just because of fuel costs. So it's definitely hitting us too.
Yeah. Well, let me give our phone numbers in case you have questions for Peter. 855-0811, 877-285-9348, and send your email to noon@indiana.edu.
We've had some questions that came in via email. Let's get going on these. The first one is, now that the IRS requires proof of cash donations, will you continue the red kettles at Christmas time?
Absolutely, yes. Yeah. The red kettles are a staple of what the Salvation Army does in this community and all across the world. And we'll continue to partner with businesses in this community to help provide relief to families who need it.
You're completely branded with those red buckets. I mean that's just – everybody thinks of the red buckets in the Salvation Army. Is that your biggest source of fundraising?
It's certainly one of the biggest, yeah. This year, we set a record here in Bloomington. We raised close to $300,000 in about a month with the kettles, and that's certainly something we've never seen in Bloomington before. So we're really excited about that.
What do you attribute that to?
We attribute that to two things. Number one, we did something called a kettle kickoff, and that's where we had folks from the community come in and donate some money, and that way is really fun. It's going to be happening again this year. And the other thing that we attribute it to is Captain Elmer Gamble is a really great organizer in terms of how he gets the volunteers out there. And so I guess I would say that it's definitely the volunteers who get out there and ring the bells, rain or shine.
You know, Mary Catherine, you and I were a team in that kettle kickoff, although you couldn't attend because of your mother, I think.
Right, yeah.
Things were not going very well then. So your substitute and I think, came in about fifth.
Fifth, well.
Katie Weissmiller, the former IU volleyball coach.
Yeah, thanks, Katie. That
she
was
great
of her to fill in for me at that time. But we'll be back. I'll if you'll have me back this year, unless, I don't know, unless you guys did such a good job. You don't want me. I don't know. Should we go on with these questions?
Yes, please.
All right. Number two, do you think the vast majority of future kettle contributors will be those who file short form for federal taxes?
You know, it's so hard to tell because we have 20 different kettle locations throughout Monroe County. Mm-hmm. We ring in Ellettsville, we ring all over Bloomington, and it's just so difficult to you know, to be able to determine that at this point. So, yeah.
Okay. And the last question from this emailer is, as kettle donations drop, do the mail-in checks increase, or do people drop checks in the red kettles?
Well, I would certainly challenge the assumption that the donations are dropping. We've seen a record number of donations coming in, and most certainly people do drop checks in, and we've been very blessed with some individuals dropping some very large checks in. But the Salvation Army is constantly diversifying its efforts to be able to provide assistance to those who need it. And one of the great new things that we're doing now is we're having online kettles, and it's easier than ever to sit at your home in the comfort of your own home and be able to give online, and you can set up a donation over a series of time or a one-time donation, but you definitely will be seeing that on our website, which is bloomington.salvationarmyindiana.org.
Now, is the thrift store, and I'm sorry, is that the way you – is that what you call it, the store that you – okay, the thrift store. Is that a positive income stream for you?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And it's positive in a couple of different ways. Number one, it's a great way to reach out to the community and be able to recycle some of the materials that people use. I mean, having the students leave town is a great way to bring in all those items. Having people doing their spring cleaning, we're able to then turn those items around, sell them back to the public, and be able to use those proceeds to benefit the child care and things like our food pantry. So.
And you employ people in the process?
Absolutely. Yeah, that's one of the great ways that we bring in people who are looking for a job or are, you know, in that field or are transitioning. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a great department.
We have a phone call, so let's go to Beth on the phone. Beth?
Hi,
there.
Hi, Peter, you talked earlier about your non-discrimination policy. Does the Salvation Army have a policy of not discriminating against either employees or clients on the basis of sexual orientation?
The Salvation Army, in terms of whether you come into the Salvation Army and are seeking assistance, we do not discriminate on those bases. You know, the way that our social services offer or our child care is set up is that if you need assistance, if you're a single mom and you need a place for your child to stay during the day so you can hold a gainful employment, you know, we're going to help you out. If you need food, if you need clothing, you need help with your rent, you need help with utility assistance, we're definitely going to help you out. Now, sometimes we may not be able to actually write a check out or give that direct financial assistance, but we will always point you in the direction where you need to go.
Well, that's good to hear. Does the same go for your hiring policies?
Yes, it does. We go through a rigorous hiring process where we make sure that we hire only the best and the most qualified to look after the children, but also to help with the thrift store and to make sure that we're providing the assistance that individuals need in a compassionate manner.
Uh-huh. Okay. Yeah, I ask because some faith-based organizations haven't been willing to do that, so I'm glad to hear the Salvation Army is doing that.
Sure, sure. Well, thanks for calling.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot for the call. 855-0811, 877-285-9348. And you can send your email to noon@indiana.edu.
What's the biggest challenge ahead of you in the foreseeable future?
The biggest challenge for us is dealing with this economic downturn that we're seeing. We depend on donors to be able to not only provide the financial resources to provide assistance, but also material assistance. And with the letter carrier's food drive that just occurred, I mean, we definitely see that as an indicator of what's happening economically. So we definitely
see that. Let's talk about that a little bit more.
Okay, yeah. Of course, the letter carrier's food drive happened this past Saturday, and Salvation Army is certainly a partner organization with that. We benefit from that food drive. And as is reported in the Herald Times, the donations were down around 30% from last year. So, some of the online comments on the Herald Times website seemed to indicate that folks didn't know it was happening or that they just couldn't give at this point because of economic reasons. So whatever the reasons are, the donations were down.
Yeah. Julio Alonso from the Hoosier Hills Food Bank sent me a note, I guess it was yesterday. And actually the donations were down significantly, but they did come back a little bit. I think they wound up collecting about 33,000 pounds of food. Last year it was 43,000. But last year was a record year,
yeah.
And perhaps our efforts to get the word out weren't as good as they were the year before, or whatever. But I think that may be a little bit of it. But it's also this economic downturn. It has to be.
Right. Yeah. Well, and even that much helps because the food bank distributes that amongst food pantries across the county, and that certainly is a benefit. But we've gotten to the point where we're now purchasing some food for our food pantry, much as Hoosier Hills is doing, because we just we can't keep it stocked all the time.
Let's talk about your child care initiative and who qualifies for that and the location. And just give us some information, if you would.
All Salvation Army programs are on the corner of Rogers and Kirkwood right here in Bloomington. We've got about a one-block area where we hold, like I said, six different departments. The child care is a registered ministry with the state of Indiana. We accept six-week-olds all the way through 6 years. So we go all the way from infants to preschool. Mm-hmm. It's a great program. We provide three meals every single day at no cost to parents through the Child and Adult Care Food Program. And we offer a great curriculum that incorporates not only some of the Christian values that the Salvation Army holds, but also a decent curriculum that incorporates the children learning through the use of their five senses to be able to go on to kindergarten and be successful.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so you've mentioned so far, we've talked about the child care mm-hmm. mission, the thrift store mission, the food pantry mission. You also mentioned meals mm-hmm. are served. What are the other two departments?
We've got, of course, our church, which is open 11 o'clock every single Sunday. And the church has been meeting here in Bloomington since 1907. So people have been worshiping in the Salvation Army Church for 101 years. And it's just been it's a great ministry. And there's some people in that church who have just been very strong and been spreading that gospel. So that's been wonderful. The other area that we haven't talked about yet is our youth ministries department. And the youth ministries department is really important this time of year because that's where our summer camps come from. We offer two different summer camping opportunities. One is a day camp called Summer Adventure Camp right here in Bloomington on the corner of Rogers and Kirkwood. And the other one is an overnight camp down near Bedford. It's called Hidden Falls Camp. And for only $30, people can send their kids for 1 week transportation. Food, everything's incorporated to Hidden Falls Camp for 1 week.
Oh, my gosh. That's amazing.
Yeah. Now, Captain Elmer Gamble is the pastor of the church, correct?
It's true, yeah. When officers are ordained in the Salvation Army, they go through a training process. And once they complete that, they are ordained as ministers and as well as corps administrators. So the Salvation Army is run by usually a husband and wife team. Uh-huh. And in that way, the Salvation Army is really unique because it places women in a very, very high role of leadership. And they're both ordained to preach on Sunday mornings, and they offer all sorts of counseling. So
okay, I've never really understood this, so pardon my ignorance on this, but this—
That's what
this,
we do best.
Yeah, that is my best strong suit, definitely. But the Salvation Army is kind of its own branch of Christianity? Is that one way to put it? Or help me understand this.
Okay. Salvation Army, it's a church, but it's not its own denomination.
Okay.
It's a universal part of the Christian church is the way that the mission statement puts it. What that means is that we're open to everybody and anybody, regardless of course, their backgrounds or their belief system, in order for us to, again, spread the gospel of Jesus Christ. And the way the Salvation Army was started was William Booth in England began to take the gospel to people who were in East London, who were a very poor part of town. And at the same time, he and his wife, Catherine, began to feed them and provide them material assistance. And that's what we do here in Bloomington, 150 years later. We're doing the exact same thing.
Where did the army motif come from?
Well, it was in 1865 when William Booth, who is the founder, and his son were putting together a newsletter of sorts, and the newsletter read a volunteer army, mm-hmm. and instead of putting volunteer army, his son changed it to Salvation Army to reflect the religious emphasis of the organization.
So, how is it? How is it organized now? And this will get us into another topic, and that is, I know. That Captain Gamble and his wife have been here for probably about 5 years?
They've been here 3 years.
3 years? Mm-hmm. Okay. And how long do people stay? Because the leadership of the Salvation Army is here for a while, and then they get transferred to someplace else and then someplace else and someplace else, right?
Yeah, I like to relate it to the United States Diplomatic Corps. Most diplomatic stays are for a couple of years, and they get moved to another location in order to make sure that they remain fresh. And it's the same way with the Salvation Army. We make sure that a set of officers doesn't become too comfortable in their location and keeps them fresh and keeps them innovative. Mm-hmm. And so the captains have received their marching orders, and mm-hmm. they'll be moving to Eastern Michigan to work over in eastern Michigan.
I see. Yeah. So how long – when are they going to be gone?
They'll be leaving mid-June.
Mid-June.
Yep.
So
and
it's
then,
coming right up.
Yeah, it's coming up pretty quickly. And then we'll have a new set of officers about a week later.
So who determines these marching orders?
The Salvation Army.
There are generals in the Salvation Army?
Yeah, it's set up much like the military is. And what happens is the United States is divided up into different territories. There are four different territories, and each territory is divided into divisions, and each division is divided into a corps. And of course, this is the Bloomington Corps. And so there are individuals in those upper echelons who make those decisions as they look at the different circumstances on the ground. So.
And so what's your role? How do you fit into the whole organizational structure?
Well, I'm an employee. So
okay. We should say that you don't have a uniform on.
No,
usually
I'm not wearing
a
uniform.
We have, you know, when you think of Salvation Army people, you picture them in the traditional navy blue uniform, but you're in regular street clothes.
That's right. That's right. And that's because I have not been through the Salvation Army Training College. I'm not ordained within the Salvation Army. I'm an employee.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, we have a phone call, and it's John. John, go ahead.
Hello. When I crossed the corner of Liberty Drive and Highway 45 there, a few hundred feet from Sam's Club, there was a couple of young girls. I'm 66, so everybody looks young to me, but I guess they were 12 and 15 maybe, holding a sign saying sick and hungry or something like that. Do you folks have an outreach program where if somebody reports that to you, you could go and check them out, see if you can do anything for them?
Absolutely. And one of the nice things about living in Monroe County is there are so many options for people to receive food and other types of assistance. And one of the things that we encourage folks to do is to refer them to the Salvation Army or other social service agencies that can provide them immediate assistance.
Well, I'm doubtful that that would work in some of these cases because I figure they can't afford cell phones and possibly don't have transportation. So that's why I use the word outreach to see if maybe you folks, upon receiving a phone call, could send someone there to interview them.
We most certainly would look into that possibility.
This was about 2 hours ago that they were there.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
These look like minors?
Yes, definitely minors.
Wow.
Peter,
sounds
swing
like,
by there on your way back.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, that sounds something that police should be
bad.
Aware of.
Yeah.
That's kind of scary.
Well, John, thanks for letting us know about that.
You're welcome.
I appreciate it.
Bye.
Bye-bye. All right. We have just 5 minutes left in the program, 855-0811 or 877-285-9348 or send your email to noon@indiana.edu. So – is there a typical client of your food pantry or, you know, can you describe the kinds of people that seek services at the Army?
No, we don't have a typical client. Yeah. It's, you know, it's your neighbor. It's the person you see walking on the street. We're there to serve everybody and anybody, and that's what we do.
Uh-huh.
We can't even begin to stereotype who comes in.
Sure.
But yeah.
Well, you said last month you had 150 families, I think, at the food pantry?
About 160, yeah.
Last month was 160, and the month before that was 150. So
mm-hmm.
it's going up.
It's upticking, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I would say that, you know, I would say that the increase is starting to be – we're seeing more elderly individuals.
Oh, really?
So, yeah.
Yeah.
Now, that's – I mean, six programming areas is a lot. I mean, that's a lot of mission to undertake. How many folks, both, I guess, employees and volunteers do you have trying to get all this done?
Oh, my goodness. We have around 30 employees at the Salvation Army, and our volunteer army is just, you know, innumerable. We, you know, there are so many people that come out and generously give their time for the kettles. We had over 200 individuals, groups, families come out and ring bells last year. We've got just all sorts of people coming out. So, but, you know, one of the easiest ways to get involved at the Salvation Army is to go to our website, and again, that's Bloomington.SalvationArmyIndiana.org and click on the volunteer tab. And one of the things that we've done now is begun to do online intakes. So you can now sign up for shifts online from the comfort of your own home.
That's great. Now, in Monroe County, are you a United Way member agency?
Yes. Yes, we are.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
That's great. So what percentage roughly of your budget do you receive from United Way?
I'm not sure of those percentages at this point,
okay.
but it's certainly a benefit to us.
Sure.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I want to go back to the kettles because that is what everybody thinks about. And, you know, I usually ring an hour or so for the kettle drive every year because I think it's fun and people are usually in a good mood. I'm always inside at the mall where it's warm. it's really interesting to see the different people. And most of the – I think it's – this is probably a general – it is a generalization, but most of the people that come up and give, it seems to me, are very young people, children.
Yeah.
A lot of times, of course, somebody will give – you know, their mom will say, here, mm-hmm. go put it in the bucket. But it's certainly teaching them an interesting habit of giving.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
But I guess I'm sort of driving to this question about Mary Catherine asked, you know, how much of your money or, you know, does the kettle drive come in? But in a broader sense, you know, people think about the Salvation Army around Christmas time because of the kettle drive. But you do have to have fundraising efforts all year long, don't you? I mean,
yeah.
And what other kinds of things do you have?
Well, one of the easiest ways for individuals to donate to the Salvation Army and make sure that services continue here in Monroe County is to give online. That's one of the easiest ways to do it. The other way that we really encourage people to do is to start looking to the future and make sure that the Salvation Army is included in your planned giving. Mm-hmm. That's one of the best ways to ensure that those who really need the assistance can receive it. Mm-hmm.
I know you're operated by a local board of directors. I know Don Weaver and Sue Talbot were the two people who were most involved with the kettle kickoff last year. How big is the board? Do you know?
The board right now sits at about 30 people. So it's a decent-sized board. And like you said, they're all quality people who really just pour out their heart to make sure that the Salvation Army continues to help those in need. So.
Yeah. So – go ahead.
Well, no, I was just – obviously you need cash because that's the most flexible and you can access so many things with cash. But if you had a wish list, what else – what other kinds of things would be on your wish list?
Top five. Number one would be food, right? Non-perishable food. Number two would be any type of personal items. We find that's in big need in our food pantry. Everything from toilet paper to feminine products to diapers to wipes, those are in need.
Sure.
The third thing I would say is to keep those donations coming to the thrift store because those are a good source of
and you can
revenue.
Turn that into cash.
Absolutely,
right.
Uh-huh. Absolutely. Yeah, the fourth thing I would say is classroom supplies for our youth ministries. And the fifth thing I would say is to go online and sign up for volunteer shifts because we cannot do it without volunteers.
And what do the volunteers do?
We have so many areas where volunteers can help. And in those six department areas, volunteers most certainly get to be plugged in. But we certainly try and find the niche for each volunteer. So we had one girl come in. She's an Ivy Tech student the other day, and she really didn't fit in anywhere. So we just created a position for her. Yeah. We truly try to find a position for everybody inside of our organization.
Mm-hmm. I would assume the food pantry has a lot of different things people could do, and child care has a lot of things people could do.
Absolutely. So. And yeah. Where we need volunteers absolutely the most is in our thrift store to make sure that those donations are sorted and get moved out onto the floor for resale.
I'm always overwhelmed by the amount of work that looks like when it –
it's a lot of work.
Yeah, to see it go from a big pile to, you know, very nicely displayed in the stores, I can only imagine the number of hours.
Are there kinds of clothing that you need more than others or things that you're often short of?
You know, I would say that the things that we're really the people ask for quite a bit are things that we don't get a whole lot of, like bed springs and mattresses. Mm-hmm. Of course, they need to be in good quality to be donated, so we don't just, you know, can't just dump them. But and of course, in-season clothing, that's always good to have.
Okay. We are out of time.
Shoot.
I know. Well, we'll have you back sometime.
It's been fun, yeah.
All right. I want to thank Peter Iverson, Community Relations Coordinator for the Salvation Army, for being here with us today. You've been listening to Noon Edition for Mary Catherine Carmichael, producer Catherine Hageman, and engineer Mike Pashkash. I'm Bob Zaltzberg. Thanks for listening.
This is a production of WFIU and the Herald Times. A podcast of this and other WFIU programs is available at wfiu.org.